Good evening, everyone. I'm Lenore Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. Well, recently, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation released its 2018 annual letter. The letter reflects on progress made in development and global health. It also looks at challenges, remaining challenges, as well as touches on frequently asked questions. And we discussed the letter with Hadis Tades. Mr. Tades is the country director of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation in Ethiopia. And I asked him, what are some of the specifics that the letter addresses? Take a listen. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation just released the 2018 annual letter, which is the 10th annual letter. Would you please give us a sense of what this letter focuses on this year?
So we usually intend to outline what has gone well, what has not gone so well, and what people should expect from the foundation going forward. And as you mentioned, this is our 10th year writing this letter. This year, Bill and Melinda decided to focus on tough questions. They usually get asked in different formats, electronically, in person, and in other ways, some difficult what people perceive to be difficult questions. Instead of just answering them individually or without the public sphere, we thought this would be a good opportunity to surface those difficult questions or tough questions and create a conversation around them. So this year's letter focuses on 10 tough questions, and it helps us sort of examine our work more closely and be transparent about what kind of things that we're involved in. So we hope that the readers will appreciate the candidness and the content that's within it, which explains some of the questions that people have been asking us for a number of years now.
Very interesting questions indeed. When I was reading them, they went from candid questions and some other questions. I was wondering, wow, people really want to know that. In this context, given that you are the country director for Ethiopia, would you tell us about some of the questions that related to Africa and how people perceive the work that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation do in Africa?
Sure. So I think at least four or five questions, maybe even six questions out of the 10 are actually relevant to Africa. One of the questions was around why are you imposing your values on other cultures? And we get asked that a lot in Africa. Another question is, does saving kids actually lead to overpopulation? This is also a question that we get asked a lot. The other question was about, is it fair that you have so much influence? There's also a question about Trump's policies, President Trump's policies affecting the work, and some of that is really in Africa. There was a question about why we work with corporations, and I think that's also relevant. I think those mostly, and then on a personal side, why are you giving your money away? What's in it for you is also an interesting question, not necessarily relevant to Africa, but at least those around values, about overpopulation, about how we work with business and the influence that we have, are very relevant questions to Africa.
Absolutely. And when we talk about values, I know that's something that people are very sensitive. They hold their values very dearly to their heart. Now, what do they seem to perceive as the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation values?
Yeah, so I think the question, behind the question is probably, and I'm speculating here, is probably the idea that, you're Western, you're Americans. Are you trying to impose Western or American values on people from in Africa?
Okay.
And the reality is actually not that. What we care about, what we work on, are actually values that Africans care deeply about. We're talking about, survival of children. We invest heavily in preventing diseases like malaria, TB, diarrheal diseases on children. We help farmers produce enough food to support themselves and protect access to markets. We believe mothers should not die giving birth. We believe HIV should not decimate our communities. So these are not, you know, American or Western cultures. These are values. In our, you know, I think there are values that we as human beings share. You know, I'm a parent, and I want the best things for my children. And I'm sure any mother, whether she's in any family, whether they're in the United States, Europe, or South Africa or Kenya, would want their children to survive and thrive. So those are the values that we aspire, and we think those are universally shared values as opposed to Western values or American values being imposed.
And you touch a little bit on some of the work that the foundation is doing. Now, how does this reflect in Ethiopia?
Yeah, so Ethiopia is one of the countries that we do most of this work. As you know, Ethiopia has a very large population, over 100 million people, and the disease and poverty burden in Ethiopia is fairly large. Although Ethiopia has made tremendous progress over the last 15 years or so, we still have a lot of people who require assistance or who can benefit from some intervention. So we work in particularly in health and agriculture sectors. In the agriculture side, we work with smallholder farmers to support them to produce more outputs and try to link them to markets both locally and internationally. So we're about sustainable productivity in the agriculture side. On the health side, we really focus mostly on mothers and children. So the survival of children, under five children and mothers is important to us. So, but then there are some other diseases, killer diseases like malaria and TB and HIV and some diarrheal diseases that we work on. And we think these are things that Ethiopians and Africans in general are trying to address. And, you know, while we're providing significant support, we're a fairly small player in the bigger scheme of things. The biggest, you know, contributors to this are usually government, and then if you take the donor landscape in general, they put a lot more money than we do. So we think we have the ability to support some interventions in these areas, and we continue to do that. So Ethiopia is a priority country to us, as is Nigeria and a few other countries in Africa. But we work in a lot of countries across the continent.
And that's Hadi Stades, is Ethiopia Country Director for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. We'll have more on our interview with Mr. Stades. It is now time for a break. But first, here's the news with Imutinyan Ijuabe.
The United Nations Children's Agency reports 5 of 10 most dangerous countries to be born are in West and Central Africa. UNICEF says infants in these regions are 50 times more likely to die within a month than if they were born in Japan or Iceland. The report also states that 1 in 16 pregnancy in the region results in stillbirth or death within a month, mostly preventable death caused by premature birth, labor complication or infection. Experts reveal that while the infant mortality rate is slowly declining, population growth means that the number of deaths is still increasing in West and Central Africa. Malawi Ministry of Health says the number of cholera cases have increased to more than 520 from 157 recorded in January, and that death had doubled from 4 to 8, according to the ministry. New cases continue to emerge in central and northern Malawi districts, including the administrative capital, Lilongwe, where 10 new cases were recorded at the weekend. Meanwhile, in Zambia, health authorities say the cholera epidemic continues to slow, with 7th death recorded over the last month. 85 people have now died since the outbreak of the disease in October, and more than 4,200 cases have been recorded. And that's a wrap-up of your latest health news. Lenore, back to you.
Thank you, Imutin Nguyen. And for those of you joining us now, welcome back. You're listening to Health Chat. On the show today, we are talking to Harry Stadis. He's Ethiopia Country Director for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And we earlier talked about the 2018 annual letter that the foundation released recently. And we will have more on our discussion with Harry Stadis. But first, VOA's Carol Pearson has this report looking at women and children's health in developing countries.
A new report shows that more women are surviving childbirth and more children are surviving childhood, even in the poorest of nations. This is the result of a UN-backed initiative called Every Woman, Every Child. Helga Fogstad is a health economist who heads the program for maternal, newborn, and child health.
More women are receiving services of care, skilled care during birth, more antenatal care, more postpartum care. Children are receiving more vaccines than ever before.
Governments and private organizations invested more than $45 billion to improve women's survival during pregnancy and childbirth. The result, since 1990, the world's maternal death rate has fallen by 44%. The funding helped train midwives, improved nutrition for women, children, and adolescents, provided education, better sanitation, and clean water. Another achievement, death rates of children under 5 declined by more than 50%. Together, they are great humanitarian achievements. It also makes sense economically. Governments save money normally spent fighting disease, and healthy people contribute to a country's wealth. Fogstad says the return on investment is high.
Every kind of investment from on women, children, adolescents, is an immense resource for the country.
Nearly all preventable deaths among women, children, and adolescents occur in low- to middle-income countries. In 2015, more than 300,000 women died during pregnancy and childbirth. Most of the deaths could have been prevented. Also that year, nearly 6 million children under the age of 5 also died, mainly from avoidable causes. That's 16,000 children dying every day. The goal now is to improve on the program's success so that every birth is a happy occasion and every child reaches his or her potential. The report is the result of the Partnership for Maternal, Newborn, and Child Health, a coalition of more than 800 organizations, including the World Health Organization. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
And now we go to VOA's Anita Powell, who takes a look at Africa's healthcare.
In Uganda, the impact of poor quality health services and a shortage of skilled health workers can be measured in human lives, according to health advocate Farida Luyiga Monje of White Ribbon Alliance.
We are losing 17 mothers and 106 newborns every day.
Monje's sister became part of that grim statistic in 2013. A tragedy she attributes to doctors intervening too late and a lack of blood supplies. Her sister bled to death in a high-end hospital in Kampala, leaving behind 4 small children. Her baby survived, but was born with cerebral palsy and suffers from developmental delays and convulsions. In rural Uganda, Mwanje says the situation is more grave.
There are no health workers. There's a general lack of life-saving commodities. The infrastructure is poor. Health workers don't have housing, the theaters are dilapidated, health facilities are not connected to the national power grid, and there's no running water in these facilities.
Worldwide, that shortage and other healthcare challenges lead to 2.4 million preventable deaths of mothers and children every year. By the year 2030, the World Health Organization estimates there will be a shortage of 18 million health workers. Health experts and advocates from 45 countries convened this year in Johannesburg to discuss this looming problem. UNICEF Chief of Health Stefan Peterson told VOA major gains can be made without complicated, costly medical research.
I think we have many effective medical interventions that can save lives, but they don't reach the people who need it, and the people don't reach those interventions at the right time. So what we're talking about now is actually reducing access barriers by making health services more accessible, improving quality of those health services, so that these available and even affordable medical interventions reach the people who need them. And by doing that, we can save at least two-thirds of those lives without new innovation.
He says African countries have also benefited from expanding community health programs with low-level health workers who handle patients' basic needs and shift some of the burden off nurses and doctors. But these changes will require money, and top health officials are concerned about possible funding cuts from the United Nations' largest contributor, the United States. Mwanje agrees.
We are truly concerned that donors are cutting back funding because our governments, well, they're not prioritizing health and they've relied mainly on donor funding. So it will take them a long time to adjust if they actually adjust. So we hope that donors can rethink their decisions and invest in health in countries where there are marginalized people, because we live in a global village and health affects all of us.
That is not, she says, an abstract concept. Every one of those women who die in childbirth, someone's mother, someone's daughter, or someone's sister. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And you are listening to Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Moudou, and today we are looking at the work of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, especially in Africa. And our guest is Hadi Stades. He is Ethiopia Country Director for the Foundation. Here is part two of our discussion. So according to the United Nations, the number of childhood deaths per year has been cut in half since 1990, and 122 million have been saved. However, when it comes to newborn health, there is a lot that still remains to be done, because a lot of babies die at birth or within the first year of their birth. What is your reaction, and how is this being addressed?
Yeah, so you're right. While we've done, the world community has done a good job of cutting under five mortality as a whole by nearly 50%, the infant mortality rates have gone down, but have not gone down as much as we want them. So it is one of the areas of intervention for us. It does require a number of to address it from a number of areas. We're looking at some innovative ways to deal with it. A lot of it is about providing skilled labor, skilled support to mothers as they give birth. And again, we call on governments and donors and the private sector, civil society, and others to focus on mothers and children. And I think over time that this too will be an issue, and the numbers will go down as much as possible. But it is, you're absolutely right. It is something that we've struggled with, but we continue to make investments and look for new innovative approaches to deal with it. And wherever there are best practices, try to scale that across multiple geographies. So this is tough. It's not an easy. Easy thing that the world is trying to deal with, but I think we're going to make progress over the next several years.
Can you perhaps elaborate a little more on perhaps a new approach that has been implemented or is being implemented that is showing progress?
Yeah, well, on the scientific side, there are a number of researches that are ongoing. I won't go into detail because they haven't been proven yet.
Okay.
But on the innovation and research side, I think a significant investment, whether it's in new vaccines or new drugs and tools, would be useful. The other thing I mentioned is really the skill sets of people who help mothers deliver in general, whether it's nurse practitioners or doctors or midwives. And I think the skill sets of these practitioners getting improved and understanding the cause of death for infants and trying to address that would be huge. Again, it's not an easy challenge to deal with, mm-hmm. but I think we're focused and we'll continue to focus on it and hopefully make progress over the next, you know, years and decades.
Coming back to Taffet's questions and perhaps frequently asked questions, so with the annual, this year's annual lecture, we see the toughest questions that Mr. and Mrs. Gates are often asked, and the foundation as a whole. What about when it comes to Ethiopia, the work of the foundation in Ethiopia? Are there some frequently asked questions that people ask you as a country director, people that are curious to see how the foundation is making an impact on the ground?
Sure. We get asked in general quite a number of questions in addition to the questions that are on this letter. A couple of them that come to mind are, Why do you just focus on aid? Why don't you focus on trade and make sustainable contribution to Ethiopia? The second question we get asked is why we don't work on the democracy and human rights space, which is a question I get asked quite a lot. And the third one that I get asked the most, I would say, is why is the foundation not working on education? You work on education in the United States, but not in Africa or in Ethiopia. And why aren't you interested in education? So I would say those three are the questions that I get asked the most.
And what are your answers to those questions?
We don't believe those are mutually exclusive. So we do think there is a room for aid. There are market failures that businesses cannot support. If we're talking about delivering vaccine to a very rural area and vaccinating kids, that's a public good. We don't believe there is a market or businesses are not able to profit from those. So I think we think there is a role for the foundation to do that. That doesn't mean there isn't any role for trade. We actually do invest in the private sector to activate or to promote the work that we are interested in. And so we think it's one. We think doing both is actually beneficial for Ethiopia as opposed to one. Most people don't know the work we do around businesses and trade, not so much trade, but more in promoting private sector and investing in companies. So I would say you're absolutely right, but we're trying to do that.
And on democracy and human rights, yes. Go ahead, I'll let you continue.
Yeah, on the democracy and human rights side, we certainly believe that free societies will prosper not free societies. But again, we chose to focus on a few areas in health, agriculture, financial services, and others. Now, we also believe that transparency, civil society engagement, and other things that are fundamental to human rights and governance are part and parcel of the things that we actually invest in and support. So we do a little bit of things, but again, it's not our competitive advantage. We're not experts in these topics, and we let others who work on these topics do what they know to do best. But we do care about it. We follow things closely. We encourage people to do the right things and invest as necessary to be able to help people gain access to free and to a free society. Now, on the education side, it is true that we have historically have not invested in education in Africa. While our resources may seem large, they're actually very small in comparison to the needs that exist in Africa. So when we prioritize our areas of engagement, we thought saving the mothers, the lives of mothers and children, and preventing them from dying and helping them thrive and be productive was the most important thing that we wanted to invest in. And then over time, we learned that agriculture and food security was very, very important, both for survival as well as an engine of economic growth in many countries. So we invest in those. Now, education is also a very, very important component of this. So we're actually looking at education to see if it would be an area of investment for us. So we haven't neglected it. We're just studying it and see what, if any, our role would be in that space.
Great. Now, moving forward, before I let you go, I want us to talk about moving forward. What are the foundations, strategic direction in terms of what's on the agenda for 2018 and onward?
In Africa, it's really strengthening the work that we do now. As I mentioned to you, that we primarily focus on health and agriculture, but we also do financial services. We work on water and sanitation. We work on tobacco prevention and a few other things. So I think it's consolidating our work in Africa. For the most part, we managed our work, and up to this point, we managed our work from Seattle, where the foundation is headquartered. But I think we've made a decision now to decentralize most of the people that work on Africa. So we'll have a lot more people on the continent, a lot more resources to invest in the continent. And while our strategic direction does not change, I think it will deepen and will benefit from more expertise on the ground that we didn't have before.
Fantastic. Mr. Haristades, it was so nice to have you on the phone today. Thank you for enlightening us on the work of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
It's really my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And that was Haristades, Ethiopia Country Director for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Now we go to our next report. A drug used to treat severe bleeding could save thousands of lives for mothers giving birth. Henry Ridgewell from VOA has the story.
Severe bleeding, known as postpartum hemorrhage or PPH, is the leading cause of maternal death worldwide, killing more than 100,000 women every year. Even for mothers who survive, like this Nigerian mother, it is a painful and traumatic experience.
I was bleeding. They were inserting something in me. Even I was telling them they should give me blood, that I want to die. Kindly help me, I want to die.
The world's poorest countries, especially in Africa and India, are the worst hit. But there is new hope. In the 1960s, Japanese researchers developed a drug called tranexamic acid, which works by stopping blood clots from breaking down. But they could not persuade doctors to trial the drug for treating postpartum hemorrhage. The London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine has done just that in a trial involving 20,000 women in 21 countries, mainly in Africa and Asia. The results show tranexamic acid reduces the risk of bleeding to death by almost a third, with no side effects for either mothers or babies. Dr. Nika Bello is a consultant obstetrician and gynecologist in Nigeria.
If a drug can prevent hysterectomies, a drug can prevent deaths, a drug can minimize the amount of blood we need to give, then that's a good thing all over the world.
But there are challenges to getting the drug where it is needed. First, the doctors must know about its effectiveness, says Professor Ian Roberts, who led the research.
We want everyone to hear about the results, but then we actually, you know, there's the nitty-gritty issues. Is the treatment available in the hospital? Do doctors and midwives know how to use it? It's heat stable, so it doesn't have to be kept in the fridge. It's relatively inexpensive, you know, it's about $1. And no child should grow up without a mother for lack of a treatment that costs $1.
In the trial, tranexamic acid was given via a drip. Researchers say the next step is to find an easier way to administer the drug so it can be used in clinics and rural settings across the world. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
What a promising research. Well, that's all for our show today. And I would like to thank our guest, Haristades, who is Ethiopia Country Director for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, for speaking with us. We thank you, our listeners, for joining us and tuning in every Tuesday to Health Chat. I'm your host, Lee Normudu in Washington, D.C., with producer Jackson Vunganyi and Skip, our engineer. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight.